When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Forever! Dog.
This is Nicole's Grey's Anatomy. She's watched the show like a lot of times. Who is gonna be chief of surgery? Shonda Rhimes wrote the show and it is really, really good. Meredith Grey.
Climb into a rocket and we set the fuse to go, go, go.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Nicole's Grey's Anatomy. It's me, Nicole, talking here about Grey's Anatomy. This episode is so much fun, and it's something that we really haven't done before, which is that rather than talking about a character or a relationship, we talk about something more meta, the music. We're talking about it more as a viewer, the music in the world of Grey's Anatomy. Our guest is an incredible musician, friend of Grey's, now friend of mine. We met for the first time recording this podcast, Steph Knipe. They are the head of, I'm not a musician. They're like the songwriter and lead singer and guitarist and all this cool stuff for Adult Mom, which is their band, which is an amazing band, and you have to listen to them. They're so good. But yeah, Steph came on. We talked about music. They told me all about these theories, about the scoring and stuff like that. It was really, really fun, and I think that you are going to have a blast listening to it. As always, I like to just do a quick little shout out that if you haven't yet subscribed, I'd love that. If you haven't written a nice little review on Apple Podcasts, I would also love that. And also that my Twitter is at nsilverberg, and if you have any thoughts about Grey's, you can always tweet them at me. And that if they are in some way relevant to the show, I'll bring them up. And if they're not, I just put them in a little document for when they do become relevant. Isn't that gorgeous? Yeah, without further ado, let's just get into the app. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Nicole's Grey's Anatomy. I am so excited to be here. It's a Tuesday night, and we're here to talk about music and Grey's with Adult Moms, Steph Knipe. I'm so happy. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Little like behind the scenes, which is that this is our first time meeting in real life. But I've liked your music so much. And then my boyfriend Branson was like, Adult Mom listens to your podcast. That's so fucking cool. And I was like, I agree. And then I was so happy that you agreed to come on to talk about the music and the show.
That makes me actually like elated inside.
I'm so glad. I'm so happy. I feel the same way. So the question that I just want to ask you to start is what is your Grey's journey?
Okay. I mean, I feel like it's pretty similar to a lot of people. I started watching in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah. I maybe like saw a couple episodes before then. But yeah, started in high school. And this was like right when Netflix started to stream.
Mm-hmm.
I specifically remember like it was like the beginning of me watching shows in my bed.
Yeah.
You know, now forever. I do it all the time. Wow.
Who would have known that back then... What we thought was a phase was really just a lifestyle.
Truly. And yeah, and then I stopped watching at the musical episode.
That's
it was my breaking
fair.
Point.
Yeah. You had inklings before then that you might be done.
Mm-hmm.
That's fair.
But you know what? Okay, I was like, you know what? I don't think I can do this anymore. But I returned like 6 months later.
Oh, picked back up where you left off?
Yeah.
What brought you back?
I just said to myself, you know, get over it.
Suck it up.
It's like, you know what? Suck it up.
I just was really hard on myself.
Yeah.
Okay, so when you started watching, I mean, what's your relationship to the show? Is it just something you watch? Is it an obsession? What's your level of, you know, where are you at these days?
I would confidently say that it is like a key part of my personality.
Me too. I mean, can you believe that? But I, who have a Grey's Anatomy theme podcast, that's a key part of my personality. How so?
Okay, like, so yeah, I've been watching it for a long time and it has become this like cult thing just for me, like a private thing,
yeah,
because none of my friends care. And now like a few of them do. But yeah, it's become such like a secretive, like private thing that I watch so constantly, like when I feel bad,
yeah,
that it's like a comfort, mm-hmm, now. So yeah.
Do you do a lot of rewatching?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I find the rewatching to be, like, I think when I was watching it for the first time through, it was like, this is a TV show that I really like. But it's in the rewatching that I was like, this is my personality. Mm-hmm. Not just that you pick up on more things as you go on, but just that it becomes very, it's very comforting. It's, mm-hmm, like listening to music that you like. You're like, oh, I love this part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like the arcs really become like things that you remember like in your life, like,
yeah,
like walking down the street. And like, I feel like I remember like lines in the, mm-hmm, show, like just randomly. And I'm like, oh, this is like really embedded in my brain.
Yeah. Are there characters that you super identify with or like, or who do you like and who do you not like is what I'm really asking.
Okay. One of my favorite characters is Callie.
Yes.
Yes. I love her. I love that, like, I am bisexual and, like, seeing that on screen was super important for me, especially, yeah, like, as a teenager watching that.
Did you know that you were bi when you were watching Callie figure out that she was bi?
No, which is so cool.
Yeah, that is really cool.
Yeah,
yeah, I've actually gotten a lot of tweets from listeners who are like, you've got to do a Callie episode. And someone's just got to, you know, freaking step up and want to do it. But there's just so much with Callie. It's so weird because when you meet her, she's a totally different version of the character than the one that I think most people end up sort of falling in love with and,
yeah,
like becoming super devoted to. But I don't know. I love all the stuff with Callie's dad.
Me too.
That's one of my favorite arcs.
It's such a realistic arc too.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's like some issues with her coming out. I feel a little bit of like, it sometimes feels like that, oh, out of nowhere, she's like queer.
Yeah.
Which is a fair thing to criticize. I mean, I don't really care that much about that. But yeah, the way that she comes out to her dad and the way that he comes around eventually is so, so sweet.
Yeah. I love Arizona's speech, where she's like, I'm a good man in the storm. That's like one of the best like Shondalogs, I think, of, yes, the whole series. But what's really interesting about Arizona coming as a character, kind of, I think, partially like designed to eventually be a partner to Callie, is that like Callie figures out that she's queer by having a relationship with a friend and then being like, everyone else knowing before she does that something else is going on. And like, also Erica Hahn doesn't know that she's gay. And like the conversations that they have later down the line where it's like, well, Callie isn't a real lesbian and that's a problem for Hahn and stuff like that. And, mm-hmm, I really like that arc, but it's very cool to then pair Callie with someone who's like, I'm out. I've been out for a long time. I've been in relationships before. I don't want to teach someone how to be queer. Mm-hmm. I just want someone who's like at my level and ready to be there. And I don't really, like, I wish you all the best on your journey, but I don't really want to like coach you through queerness. And,
yes,
I think that to me kind of like retroactively corrects some of the things that I think are kind of a little funky about Callie's coming out, because it seems like they almost are like acknowledging like,
We know. We like brought in the first queer character by just like having her not know that she was in love with her best friend who didn't know that she was in love with her. Like, yeah. We know. But I ended up like loving, I loved it more in retrospect when I was like, I realized what she was bringing to the relationship with Arizona. But I don't know. It takes all kinds in the Grey's Anatomy universe.
It does.
You got it.
Everything is with a grain of salt.
Yes.
Yes.
That is true. Are you still watching?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm caught up.
I find that to be increasingly true in these like
oh, yeah.
social, like social justice themed episodes that are really ambitious. And when you think about how many millions of people watch Grey's every week and not all of them live in like these really diverse urban, like, you know, cultural centers where everyone watches like prestige TV and stuff like that. Like you're like, okay, that's really valid. But sometimes you're like, okay, that's a real, real reductive version of like what police brutality is.
Yeah. Well, they do these like PSA episodes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you like the, like that, the episode of this past season, the one with Joe, like knowing instinctively to line the halls with women to support a sexual assault survivor?
Yeah, I think I get it. Like, it's important. Like, it's a good way to tell that story. And I like how it wasn't, like, super exploitive because that's a thing.
Yeah.
But I personally, I was like, oh, I would not want that to be.
That's how I felt. I was like, I would hate that. I guess the thing that I liked about it the most was something that I didn't realize was revolutionary, which is that they portrayed the process of getting a rape kit done.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that was like I ended up reading after the fact that they were like, that was a fight. And I was like, oh, that was a fight. My bar was too high for what ABC like will and won't do. If it was a fight for them to be like, this is what a cotton swab has to look like, which was like a legitimate argument that they had. I was like, oh, I was expecting too much out of what a network drama could do.
That's fair. I always forget that layer that it's a network primetime drama.
Yes. And that like that for every plot line that they have that's like tackling like a quote progressive issue, they get a bunch of like angry YouTube comments from people being like, don't try to shove politics down my throat. I'm just trying to watch some hot doctors have sex at work, which, by the way, doesn't happen anymore.
I'm on the Reddit boards.
You are? Oh my gosh, what's happening there?
Okay, it is like probably the most embarrassing thing that I engage with on a daily basis because it is like it is horrifying. It's just like people. My favorite thing about it is people will post things like, I can't wait for someone to be brutally murdered tonight. Like, I'm waiting for someone to die.
Yeah.
Like, it's so vicious.
Right. Because it's like people who have the long view of the series who are like, it's been a while since we had a death. Which is
it's true.
And you know I'm praying for Owen to go. Yeah. It's his time. It's his time.
But yeah, you get a ton of people on the Reddit boards being like, when did this show become so political?
So even on Reddit, that's like a conversation? Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. So someone actually just tweeted at me before I came here about a Reddit thing, and I had questions about it, and now I realize that I can ask you. Okay, this is from @Twituba. Just spent some time on the Grey's Anatomy Reddit and discovered that people often refer to the original five interns as Magic. Do you think that's how you say it?
Yeah.
And M-A-G-I-C, which I've never put together, Meredith, Alex, George, Izzy, Christina.
Mm-hmm.
Magic. There's no way that was done on purpose, but also Shonda might have done that on purpose.
Wait,
okay. Are there any other like Reddit-y thing? Because I'm obsessed with that.
Well, there's like memes where like, okay, what's his name? Oh my God. Bailey's husband, Warren.
Ben Warren. Don't worry. I only know his name because I had a crisis a little while ago where I could not for the life of me remember his name. And I was like, it'll come to me. And then days passed and I was like, what is his name?
It's awful.
Ben Warren.
But yeah, he's on an episode of Friends. He's like a cameo, I think, as a firefighter.
Wow.
Which is heavy and loaded. But people will like, there's like every week someone will post that picture and be like, OMG, like Ben Warren. And like people will come and be like, take a shot because someone posted the Ben Warren cameo on Friends, whatever the actor's name is.
Oh, that I could not tell you.
Yeah.
Do you watch Station 19?
Absolutely not.
Okay, but
I refuse.
We might have to start. Have you seen this news? I love to bring in current events on Grey's Anatomy, kind of what's happening. And with all of the Ellen Pompeo news, I think this just got overlooked. But Krista Vernoff, who is the showrunner for Grey's Anatomy, is now also the showrunner for Station 19, which for those of you who work in TV, you understand that that's absolutely bonko. Like that job, like that, how can one do that job at once, let alone twice at once? That's the right way to say that. So, because a showrunner is essentially the person who is like the CEO of the show. They are in charge of all of the executive function of the show, the planning, the scheduling, all of the hiring. They oversee all of that, but they also oversee all the creative stuff. So it's like Krista Vernoff is the head writer as well. So she's in the writer's room. She's helping to figure out, you know, the season arc and making assignments and doing edits. And then she's in the editing room and she's on set and she's doing all of these things. It is more than a full-time job. You're doing it a billion hours a day. So to do that for two shows is, I would say, suspicious. And my suspicions were confirmed when basically they said that they're putting her in charge of Station 19 in order to facilitate more crossover episodes so that every Thursday night it is essentially like 2 hours of the same show. So first you watch Grey's and then you watch Station 19, and the characters flow freely between the two shows, and that by her being in charge of both, it's like blending the two shows together. Thoughts?
I just want to say one thing. I hate to see that.
Yeah, and you hate to see it. I also hate to see it. And all the previous crossovers that they've done between Station 19 and Grey's, I have not watched the Station 19 half. And in fact, when I'm watching the Grey's half, where Station 19 characters are in it, I've thought, who cares?
I agree. It's, to me, it feels oppressive.
Yes.
I'm like, why do I need to watch another? Also, people hate Station 19 on the Reddit boards.
On the Reddit boards.
And also hate Krista.
They hate Krista.
They hate Krista.
I think that Krista gets a lot of hate.
Yeah.
Which is,
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, I don't think that when Krista, I feel like I consider myself to be a Grey's super fan, but I did not think that the quality dipped at all when Krista became in charge. But it's people love to have someone to blame.
That's what I'm, yeah.
Yeah. There, everyone else, you know, you don't see people blaming Zoanne Clack.
No.
But she's been there since day one. And if you, maybe she's at fault. We don't know.
Maybe it's her fault.
maybe it's Dr. Zoanne Clack's fault. I love to think about Zoanne.
Is she the medical advice?
She is.
Yeah.
I think now there's more than one.
Okay.
But yeah, from the beginning, that's like who she's been. It's incredible to me. I'm very inspired by her. She also is like, does a lot of negotiating for the writers union. And so I see her name on a bunch of, yeah, there's like a current writers guild battle with agencies. And Zoanne Clack is part of the negotiating, not board, like team.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so appreciative to Dr. Zoanne Clack because you got to love an agent. You got to love it. Not an agency, a union. Wow.
Yeah.
Slip of the tongue there. Okay, so you love Callie.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are other faves or not faves?
I love to hate, so I want to talk about people I don't like. I don't like a lot of people, actually, on this show.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, it's been done to death, but Owen is, to me, a horrifying man.
Did you always hate him?
Yes.
See, that's a little rarer. Some people just grew to hate him, but you knew.
I hated him day one. Like when he comes in and pulls the icicle out, I was like, not cute. I don't like it.
He's very gruff.
He's so aggressive.
Yeah.
Why is he? He must be like a Scorpio or something. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I don't know, though. Scorpios have a little bit more of like an enticing sexual energy.
That's true.
And I don't know.
He just
He's like a Virgo gone wrong.
Virgo gone wrong.
I mean, and Virgos already have gone wrong just by default. But like, he's like a Virgo. Oh, maybe like a Virgo Leo cusp. That would do it.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Hate to see that.
I hate to see that.
Oh.
Yeah, I hate Owen, mostly because, okay, like the one thing that I love about the show is how well they portray like emotional abuse.
Yeah.
And like they show it really well with Preston Burke and they show it really well with Owen. And like that, like Christina, it is, of course, it's always happening to Christina, but she like defends herself so well, which like it's so intense. But yeah like to me, like Owen is like super emotionally manipulative.
Yes.
Like constantly.
That's so true. I've never really thought of Burke as being emotionally abusive, but he is.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like withholding of love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's really sad that, I mean, Christina's drawn to characters of authority because she is so powerful and superior to like her peers, like ambition wise and intellectually, that I'm not surprised that she like as a character really craves people who feel superior to her in some way so that she just like can take a break.
Oh yeah.
But yeah. But then you also just think like, who's the type of person who then thinks that they've got something to, you know, to teach Christina? That's a bad.
I think the biggest misstep of Grey's Anatomy, and this is a bold statement, is to say that Christina should have been a lesbian from the beginning.
Yeah.
And she has so much gay energy, like pilot episode. Like I rewatched, I was like, oh my God.
I mean, she has like a leather duster too. It's like,
yeah,
they don't even let straight people buy that. You can't.
It's true. As a gay, it's true.
The like alarm goes off when you try to leave the store.
Yeah.
They're like, ma'am, where's your wife? Yeah. That I wonder if that ever, I mean, I think because she was a proxy for Shonda in some ways that maybe it just she didn't even consider it. But I do agree that she has like a strong, she has a strong I don't want to fuck men energy.
So strong. And like it's not that she's super sexual towards women or like even flirtatious. She's like not flirtatious with women.
But she's not flirtatious with anyone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you're like, she is a butch top, like absolutely, like would be like a character on the L Word.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd love to see that crossover.
It could happen.
It won't.
It won't, but what if it could?
Someone's written a fan fiction.
That is definitely true. And as the resident Reddit expert, you've got to scour the boards and find it. There's got to be some link somewhere from like 8 years ago on the Grey's Anatomy Reddit where someone's like, okay, so I've been working on a thing. I'm like really nervous to share this, but
there's so much Amelia Arizona fan fiction.
Really?
So much.
That would have been great.
Would have been great.
Yeah. Wow. Sorry, I'm just like thinking about how actually for all of the stuff that has happened to Amelia, there is really a lot of like untapped potential. Do you like Amelia?
Love her.
Yeah, me too.
I'm like obsessed with her.
Pre-tumor though, and also immediately post-tumor, I really didn't.
That's
and then
fair.
I thought it was so crazy that she had a tumor and that they were like, well, the reason why you hate her is because she had a tumor. That wasn't her real personality. We don't know what her real personality is.
I hated like, that.
What?
And they're like, this is why she's an addict.
I was like, is this allowed? Are you allowed to just wipe a character's slate clean and just be like, yeah, her brain was all scrambled.
Well, they do it often on this show.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I think that Arizona, I miss more than any character that's departed since Christina.
That's fair.
Yeah. I loved Arizona. I don't really like She was the one who was dating the older DeLuca, right?
Oh, yeah.
I got fuzzy for a second.
What's her name? Karina.
Karina.
Karina. What a pointless character, in my opinion.
No, but you don't understand. She's like a gynecologist who likes sex.
She's horny.
She's horny. She's a horny gynecologist.
She's like, oh, but then Amelia did say, she was like, I masturbated for Karina because I had a crush on her. She said it like in the finale.
Oh, yeah. I kind of glossed over that.
But like, that's insane. Like, that's an insane line.
Yeah. What are you thinking is going to happen with Teddy and Owen in season 16? Do you think they're going to be together or do you think that there's a god?
My fantasy is for Teddy to be like, no, like, screw you. I'm like done with this, like a 1,000,000%. And then like Owen like dies tragically. And then Teddy like gets together with Amelia. And then they like raise the, what's the baby's name? Leo. Yeah. That'd be great.
Wait, could that's work? Really good. I would love that. That doesn't feel impossible.
Nothing's impossible.
Nothing's impossible. Nothing's impossible in Seattle.
Where dreams are made of.
I'm trying to think. What were the cliffhangers? Oh, yeah. Meredith going to jail. No. For those of you who are not caught up, there's a bit of a cliffhanger at the end of season 15, which is that Meredith committed insurance fraud for a child of, I mean, I'm already starting to get dizzy. A child of an illegal immigrant needed a surgery. And so she put the name of her daughter on the insurance forms because her daughter has insurance. And then she got caught. And then her boyfriend, Andrew DeLuca, was like, I did that and went to jail. And then Meredith was like, I love you. And I did it. And then it ended the season with her being like, I have to tell the police what I did, which is also, it's so funny to be like, yeah, just tell the, you know, the local police that you committed insurance fraud. I'm sure that they'll handle that perfectly.
I always thought about that. Like, how do you turn yourself in? Yeah, you just like go to the police station. You're like, I committed a crime.
Yeah. Hello. I was just wondering if I could speak to someone about the crime I committed. It's like a paper crime. It's a federal. I committed a federal crime. We'll see. We'll see. Season 16. I don't know. I'll probably bring in a firefighter because that's what station is on station 18. Firefighters. Oh my God, they had that crossover episode towards the end of the season where there was a firefighter who was like, I'm dating this person. And all the other firefighters were like, what? And then as an audience member, I was like, I don't know who any of these people are. I don't know who's dating. What? I don't care. Why is this happening to me?
I wish I cared.
Yeah. Oh, I wish I cared. That is the slogan for like 50%. Do you like, sorry, one last. Do you like Joe and Alex? Joe and Alex.
I love Alex.
Yeah.
Or like love his arc.
Yes.
Love his growth. I'm rewatching right now and I'm like at the part where like Joe's introduced and I love her when she's introduced.
Yeah.
I feel like
I need to rewatch that.
Yeah, it's good. Like she has so much about her that's so interesting. And like there's a scene where like Alex and her get like wasted at Bailey's wedding and like steal that guy's room and like drink all the alcohol like in this like random man's hotel room. It's really sweet.
Aww.
But there's like all these cool moments that I like. But now I'm like worried for them.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
But I am actually so glad that they showed the arc of her going to get psychiatric care.
Yes.
Yeah.
For those of you who aren't caught up, Joe went to go find her birth mom and found out that her birth mom had like given her up as a baby because she had been the product of rape. It's very depressing.
Yeah.
And Joe kind of understandably is devastated by this information and goes into a depressive spiral that no one can help. And it lasts, I mean, on the in the world of Grays, I think it lasts weeks. In the world of like our world of watching week to week, it lasts months. I mean, it was like, it was probably like 2.5 months worth of episodes, yeah, at least, where just she was like depressed or drunk or not working or just and wouldn't tell anyone. And finally, she told Meredith what was going on. And Meredith like encourages her to reach out. And the end of the season ends with her checking into an inpatient psychiatric facility. That is a really good move.
Yeah, I love, I mean, I actually really like how they did that arc. I think it's super realistic. And I don't think I haven't cried in a long time, like watching the show. And I mm-hmm. cried so hard when Meredith is in bed with her.
Yeah.
It's so intimate and sweet.
Yeah. And just the way that they kind of thread, like, you know, Meredith, bless you. Our producer, Andrew, had a bit of a sneeze.
Honestly, how dare you?
Sneezing in a moment where we're honoring Meredith. I mean, it's a way of paying respect. You're subverting expectations, and that's what Dr. Gray does. Wow. Yeah, I mean, I loved that too, because also like Meredith talks to her about her own like suicidal ideations that she had back in season 3.
Yeah.
And it's very rewarding as a longtime viewer to be like, God, that was 12 years ago.
Yeah.
I guess at first I kind of felt like there wasn't really, they hadn't really laid track for Joe to have any depressive episodes. Like we know that Joe has been through a lot and that she's had dark times like in her marriage and her homelessness as a like a teenager. But the way that they always kind of did it was like, I went through hell and I came out the other side and I'm stronger now and I'm not going back. And that's like a very... It's a very impressive stance, but I don't know. I never had the indication that she had any type of rock bottom or that she had any, like they kind of point towards some like substance issues, like mm-hmm. how she's kind of using alcohol to numb the pain. And I don't know. I guess I just feel like knowing what I do about mental illness,
mm-hmm.
it's not like soup. I mean, obviously you can have like an event happen to you, but she's had many events. Mm-hmm. It's not super common for like in your late 20s, mm-hmm. the very first wisps of like, mm-hmm. like, you know, for depression to hit you like a train for the very first time with no prior episodes and nothing to indicate that, like doesn't tend to be how your brain chemicals work. However, once I accepted that we were like in it, I was like, yes, this is very accurate because she literally cannot be talked out of it. And it's mm-hmm. not a choice. Mm-hmm. She's just like, this is what's happening right now. And I appreciated that. And I also appreciated that it was like, people have dealt with mental illness in various ways on the show. And I liked that the show didn't suggest that because you've dealt with it yourself or because you've dealt with someone who has that you can fix anyone. It was like, no, this is a job for a medical professional.
Yeah.
And for like sustained treatment, not like a weekly therapy session mm-hmm. as Owen underwent. And then after the first one, he was like, I remember the day my dad died. We're like, oh, did you?
Hate it.
That's convenient. Yeah. Didn't love it.
I mean, like, I was like, oh, this is cool. They're showing, like, this cool, like, trauma therapy.
Yes.
Very cool.
And yes, I have friends who have done that exact, like...
Oh, cool.
Oh, yeah, like, that eye movement.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's very effective.
Mm-hmm.
It takes time.
Yeah.
It takes, like, quite a bit of time.
As, like, trauma, like, it's, like, talking about trauma is not just, like, a one and done.
Right. Also, the people I know who go to trauma therapy go to on top of their regular therapist. Mm-hmm. They go to a regular psychotherapist, and then they have a trauma therapist who they go to where they do, like, eye movement stuff. It's supplemental to, complementary even, to their regular therapy regimen. Yeah. I I started off loving it because I was like, the fact that Owen was like, oh yeah, it's like any other disease. Mm-hmm. I stopped treating my trauma and it came back. Mm-hmm. Like you have to keep working at it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise you won't like stay better. You can't just like cure yourself.
Right.
But then that exact thing happened later in the episode where he remembered the day his dad died. Ugh.
Which is like, for me, I'm like, that's, Grey's doesn't usually do it like that.
No, they don't.
They do such a good job at, I mean, the therapy, I know that you love Meredith's therapy arc. And I do. Guilty. I love it so much.
Yes.
But like, I love Christina's like arc, like mm-hmm. after the plane crash. And like, I feel like they do that pretty well.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, what is, why? I feel like they're just, I don't know. Maybe they just like need to get things out really quickly now. For yeah. some reason. I don't know.
Oh, okay. I think now is a good time for us to transition to talking about the theme of this episode yeah. that you chose, which is the music of Grey's Anatomy. What made you want to choose this as your theme?
Well, okay. I am a musician.
It's so true. It's so true.
And I think that the soundtrack was super formative to me as a songwriter.
Really?
Yeah. I feel like I heard, it was like the first time I heard Tegan and Sarah. Yeah.
Yes. I just guessed because I wrote that down. So much Tegan and Sarah early
so
on.
So much. And the first song that they play in the pilot is
Portions for Foxes.
Yeah, Portions for Foxes. Yeah. Which is, Rilo Kiley is like my favorite band.
Yeah.
So for me, like, and they've showcased so many women mm-hmm. songwriters and female artists on the show that I think it was the first time I really heard like a breadth of female songwriters
yeah.
in one sitting. And also like, obviously there's so many women on the show already
yeah.
running this. It was, yeah. So for me, it's important personally.
Were you writing music in high school when you started watching the show?
No, but I started writing in college.
Okay.
And so I was still, yeah, watching. Yeah.
I mean, of yeah. course. That's so cool. Okay, you selected some clips. Mm-hmm. We're going to look at them in a second. First, we're just going to take a quick break for an ad, and then we're going to be right back. Hello, we're back. Oh my gosh, and we have some clips to get into with music moments. Well, what were the criteria for you of selecting these music moments?
So I wanted to find like the iconic moments of the show that resonate with me, but also where the music really feels like the score.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's so cool. Okay, perfect. So this first moment that you have is probably like a top five mm-hmm. musical moment on the show when people think about Grey's music, which is the Bomb in the Body Cavi episode when with Anne and Alex, Breathe, parentheses, 2 a.m. Or is it the other way around? 3 a.m. parentheses, Breathe. That might be right.
I don't know.
2 a.m., 3 a.m. You know, all this information was in front of me moments ago. And I could have looked at it, but instead, I didn't. And I thought, I'll remember what it's called. And kind of here we are. Okay. Let's watch the clip. And I will say, we're starting the scene like, this song has been playing. We've been volleying between Bailey giving birth, Derek with a patient, and Meredith with the bomb in the body cavity taking it out to give to Kyle Chandler. If you only died running around 2 a.m. and I'm still awake writing a song. If I get it all down on paper, it's no longer inside of me, threatening the life it belongs to. And I feel like I'm naked in front of the crowd, 'cause these words are my diary, screaming out loud, and I know that you'll use them however you want to. But you can't jump the track, we're like cars on the
table. Oh my god, she just let go of the bomb.
Like an hourglass glued to the table. No one can find the rewind button now. Sing it if you understand. The way that her head hits the floor is really upsetting.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like they, she really hurts herself.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Her performance in that, just the way that her eyes are just welled up with tears and she's so scared. Oh, what an incredible moment. Okay. Tell me what it means. Tell me what it means musically. What's happening?
Well, okay, like, they're so good with lyrical cues on this show.
Yes.
But the part that makes me, like, get chills is when she, she's taking the bomb out of out of the body. And then the lyric is, it's no longer inside of me threatening the life it belongs to.
That's so crazy. I didn't even notice that. I was feeling more like, I was noticing more when I was watching it kind of with the music in mind, like rhythmically, that like the cues of like when verses end and start and like different phrases like are really synced up with the movement, like when it transitions from her hand to Kyle Chandler's and, you know, those kind of moments are like choreographed almost. It's
so choreographed.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's also so funny because like that song was not, a lot of these songs I think didn't have like a huge life before being on Grey's, but that was like a huge hit.
Oh yeah.
And it's kind of cool to like take a song that is a radio hit that's has no like nostalgic value. It's still kind of new and have it be this massive underscore of like several really big moments.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. That's so true.
I don't think that, like, it's kind of a risk to have a song that a lot of people already know and have know the words to and stuff. Like, by the time I saw this episode, I was like, oh, I know every word to this song. I've heard it a million times.
I love that.
Yeah.
Actually, I think that's so cool because it is such, well, what year is this? Like 2006, 2005?
This episode? It's end of season, middle of season two. So it probably was like early 2007. Oh, no, 2006. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, music is in such a weird place where, like, this song would be a hit on the radio, which is, like, would never happen now at all.
Right.
You know, which I, that's what I love is, like, this era of Grey's, like, is so in the culture.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very, yeah, no, it's, it has, like, one leg in, like, radio, like, hits, and then one, the other leg in, like, guitar driven indie like singer songwriter stuff. You know what song I was trying to think about? It's a song that makes me think of Grey's, but I couldn't like visualize the exact moment. Was Ramalama Bang Bang. Do you know that song?
No.
Okay, I'm gonna play it just because, you know, that's what this episode is about. This is a song that is in like a season two episode where like a bunch of stuff is happening, like Burke and Christina are like fighting. I looked up today exactly what's happening in it because I was like, what is...
Is this the one with all the weird noises in the beginning? I'll see.
Maybe.
I'll see.
It's the song?
Yeah.
Like, this was also in that same season. And I... The song makes me think of Grey's.
Yeah.
Bum, bum, bum. Bum, bum, ba-dum, bum. Yeah. This to me is like a quintessential like Grey's song. It's like... It's a song, all right.
Oh, it's a song. People are like taking off their scrub tops. And
yes.
Like, yeah.
This is like such a typical vibe. And it's like this voice, this vocal quality, very Grey's.
Very Grey's. Did Grey's invent the vine with the, I have welcome to my kitchen vine? Oh. Do you know what I'm talking about? I'm not explaining this well.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, no, Grace. No, that's canon. Grace created the stage for that. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it is so funny that like through doing like Shondalogs and stuff on the show, it is, there are certain qualities, just like a vibe that it's like they're like, there are some big umbrella vibes that a lot of music falls into. Mm-hmm. And early on, before there had been so many episodes that some of it felt like data, it was like, what are they, how are they finding this? Mm-hmm. This, like, how are they pairing this together? The music supervisor for the show is so smart.
She is iconic. Wait, what's her name? Her name is Alex Pitsavas.
Oh, yes.
She did the did the music supervision for the OC and
did she
Gossip
really?
Girl and the Twilight Saga.
I don't know that people know that she did it for OC too, because Grace is talked about often in the same breath as the OC as being like where a TV soundtrack was like a culture making moment. I didn't know that she also did that. That's so cool.
It's so cool.
And the Twilight Saga. I mean, those I missed that as a thing to be into,
me too.
But those soundtracks were also a big deal, I think.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That's wild. I wonder what quality that is in your brain that makes you so good, not just at pairing a song to a moment dramatically, but like, and emotionally, but just knowing what the zeitgeist wants. Mm-hmm. That's such a cool skill to have.
She is like so fascinating, and like I watched an interview with her where she talks about like how she picks the songs for Grays specifically, and she says that like her and Shonda sit down at like the beginning of every season and like kind of create like the mood that they want to like portray. And like I think she said, like when she interviewed for the pilot, Shonda was told her that she wanted the music to be the score,
yeah,
like during surgery and all that stuff. And Alex, the music supervisor, was like, that doesn't make any sense. How are we gonna like play like indie rock while people are doing surgery?
Yeah,
it's like it hadn't been done on any, especially on a medical drama.
That's so crazy that I would have never realized that was unprecedented in some way.
Yeah,
whoa, that's really cool. I didn't know that. I didn't know any of that. I didn't know that she had those other jobs, and I didn't know that was something new that they were doing. Because there is music playing in almost every moment of the show. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of dead air.
And that makes it so interesting, too, because when they don't have music playing, it's super intentional.
Yeah.
Like the space that they give.
They've really had a decline in the actual scored music in the last several seasons. That really typical, like, this is a joke moment. No one's going to die, like that music.
It's like bum, ba, dum, bum, ba.
Yes, exactly. It is like that. That music. And then, like, obviously the Derek and Meredith theme hasn't been played in a very long time. But, you know, those used to be really, like, linchpins of the musical life of the show. Okay, your next clip that you have is, we recently played this clip on the show for a completely different reason, but it's when Meredith has her panic attack when she realizes that she doesn't want her mom to die alone. Okay, this is also season two. Let me pull it up.
It's a big girl world now, full of big girl things. Every day I wish I was small. Cause I've been counting on nothing, but he keeps giving me his word.
May she rest in peace. Time of death. 12:42.
I'd like to know if you'd be open to giving me a second chance.
I really have chills.
Yeah, me too. Interesting because it the song is playing when you come back from commercial, like it just mm-hmm. it like the this is something that I've noticed in a lot of the clips that you pulled, is that the song that it's not just a section of the song, they really let a song like play out for a period of time and kind of set a tone, and you kind of understand the song to be a certain thing, and then they like with the bomb mm-hmm. it's like by that time the song has been playing for such a long time, you never even consider that anything could disrupt it, and then when the bomb goes off it's like a very mm-hmm. like jarring moment. And with this it's like you see like a baby get born and you see a woman die and you mm-hmm. see like this like
so
like
much happened.
So much happens before then, kind of this climactic moment with Meredith and Derek that really makes me cry.
Yeah, it's okay. It's so good. Like, it's so good. And it, because, okay, that scene to me, that's like one of my favorite scenes of all time on the show.
Yeah.
And like, there's all these external, like, tragedies happening and a beautiful thing, a baby being born. And then there's like this smallest intimate moment between the two of them. And they're also at this point not together.
Right.
There's so much tension.
Yes.
And like, the song. Like it changes into that chorus,
yes.
As soon as they touch hands,
right?
And that's when I was like,
"Yeah, no, that's I know." Well, and the first time that it goes into the chorus is like right after the older woman mm-hmm. has died, and like the friends like kind of have this moment together. Yeah, that song is really, really beautiful, and is the same artist who sings that song when Meredith and Derek have sex in the on-call room.
Oh.
At the end of season 2. And I wonder if that is some sort of like thematic bookend or just a coincidence. But yeah.
I feel like I feel like they would do that on this show.
They would do that. Yeah. I had really forgotten about that scene until Shayna brought it up in her episode. And I've thought about it a lot since that. Mm-hmm. It's just very, I don't know, as a writer, I wonder if I would have thought to write that moment.
Yeah.
It's like a very, I mean, it's just the way it's performed is like also just exceptional. And Pompeo is so good.
So good. It's She's crazy. So talented. And I feel like sometimes like the music, like I think you said this, like it feels like its own character.
Yeah.
And when there's like a female voice singing, I kind of envision it to be Meredith's like inner mono. You're like, yeah.
That makes sense though, especially with like the fact that there's actual voiceover that Meredith does. Wait, that's such an interesting read. In the words of Chris Murphy, that Grays is a text.
I studied media studies.
Yes, so. You're qualified.
I'm qualified.
You're qualified. Okay, next clip.
Yeah.
This is, I'm having so much fun.
Me too.
I also feel like I'm learning. Okay, next clip is, oh, you know what? I was wrong. It's not the artist that is the same for this song. It's the next song, Kate Havnevik.
Yes.
She has the song that is the same one. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kind of forget what I was saying before about the bookend thing, because that's not true. But what a nice idea, right? Okay, this moment is crazy good, and I have never noticed the music in it before, so I'm really excited.
Yay.
This is in the episode where who you later find out he's an intern at Mercy West. Something has happened like after a really long shift, and he crashes his car into like a family of Southerners.
Yeah.
And like, is the dad's name like Big John or something like that?
Like Papa or something.
Yes. Yeah. We'll just call him Papa.
Yeah.
So it's like the pregnant daughter, her husband, and then like the Southern Belle mother, and this like big man, and the baby lives, but the pregnant, the mother, Papa's daughter, dies, and the intern is like devastated. And you later find out that he had some type of a brain thing happen. It wasn't that he was just tired and fell asleep at the wheel, and he wants to apologize. And this is the scene where the dad agrees to let him apologize and comes into the room to be apologized to. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, here we go.
These are all so intense.
I know, but it's so good.
Nowhere high, go nowhere warm, until I see a smile and feel your calm. And I lick a dime, I crave for you, boy. You're like a parachute descending from the sky.
I am sorry.
But I'm sure you're on your way.
I am sorry.
Yes, I'm sure.
So sorry.
You're on the road. Thank you.
You're like a feather. You go where wind and fire melt together.
That's such a good scene.
It's so theatric.
Yes.
It's so theatric. Like he, the papa, the father, like starts to end, like approach him as the music starts to swell.
Yes. Ugh. And like there's like that drum beat that's like pulsing, and it cuts to like George being worried, and it cuts to Meredith being worried, like during that of like the tent, like the tension in the room. Yeah. And then as soon as he puts his hand on the intern, it's like the first part that we heard comes back. Oh, I know. I never thought about the music in that scene before, but it's so perfect.
It's so good. And like again, lyrically, like he like careens into his hand like in a comforting way, and then the lyric is like your hand in mine.
Yeah.
And it's, to me, it's like very, like I revert to like, that's like a, I feel like a child.
Yes.
Like when you're sick and you like your mom hugs you, like that's what that reminds me of.
Yeah. I've always been really like struck by that image of like of this action of like forgiveness, this wordless action of like gesture of just, he puts his huge hand on his shoulder, and it's like, you know that he's saying like, it's not like he could never say the words like, it's okay, or I forgive you, because his daughter just died. But it's like somehow they've done the work that when he puts his hand on the shoulder, you like know that he's saying like, I know you didn't mean to.
Right.
It's very smart how it's all, how they make it all work.
Grace is so smart.
It is very smart.
And this music supervisor is like an artist.
Does she still work for the show? Do you know? That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I am mad at her for the one season that was all of the acoustic covers of songs from the 80s. But
that was Shonda's idea.
Okay, I it's know. Fine then. She's absolved.
I just read about that today.
Yeah, our precious music supervisor, who is a hero, did not. It's not her fault. Thank
yeah,
God.
I did. I hated that decision.
Yeah, it just took me out of it, I think that like Grays does such a good job of just layering in the music. Mm-hmm. So it's part of like the texture of the world. And it, anything that just takes you out of it is like not, not helpful. Okay. Number four. Okay. This is the YouTube clip. So we'll get straight into it. This is season 8. Bit of a jump. Do you want to set this one up?
Oh, yeah. So this is when Henry is undergoing emergency surgery, who Christina is performing and does not know that it is him.
Yeah, they like put him on the table and draped him before she came in.
Yeah. And he ends up dying.
Yeah.
And then Owen reveals to her that it was Henry.
Right. So you're going to hear a scene, and that's in the OR when she calls time of death and stuff. And Owen and Lexi are in the scrub room, and she's like talking to them through, and Richard is in the OR, and everyone knows except for Christina. And there will be a moment when like you only hear music, and it's like Christina has found out and you can't hear what she's saying, but she's like screaming and crying and like hitting Owen, and it's certainly worth watch, but we're watching it. Okay.
There's really not so much to tell. She was 29, showing signs.
Time of death, 8:52 p.m. There was no way to take it out without killing him. And there was no way he could live with it in him for much longer. Well, I'll write the op note. But if you can add a few lines that make it clear that I didn't come up with a treatment plan, it's a bad outcome, and I don't want to take the heat for it in my fifth-year boards. It was Dr. Ullman's idea.
With the
Oh, hey. The tumor eroded right through the pulmonary artery. The guy bled right out. We were done before we started. Is there a family or something we need to talk to? Since the day she wrote a note and chose to float away into the ether. Someone said they saw her south at the coast on the river's mouth, but only briefly. Cause she went quietly, she didn't make a sound. She went quietly with a wish not to be found. She went quietly without a word of where, just a note that wrote, forgetting is easier.
Secure the umbilical line with extra tape. You need the D.
Oh.
Sandra Oh.
Yeah, I mean, just watching it is devastating. But then I, this time, listened to the lyrics more, and that's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Because the lyrics are, she went quietly, and she's screaming, mm-hmm. but you can't hear anything mm-hmm. because she's behind the glass. Oh,
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, that's so good.
It's so good.
And there's also like this breath in the music when they take the piece of like draping off of Henry's face, and you like really see that it was him and that he's dead. Oh, it's the best show that's ever been made, I guess, is what I really want to say. It's the only good television show that I love.
It's too good.
Any other thoughts on that clippy?
They're just brilliant. Like, yeah. That's all I have to say. It's just brilliant.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, last one, which another, maybe like the number one classic,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The Snow Patrol chasing cars mm-hmm. When Denny dies and Izzy is there. Okay, we all know this clip, so I'm just gonna play it.
Isn't that the most ridiculous piece of crap you've ever heard? If I just lay here, would you lie with me and just forget the world? I don't quite know how to say how I feel. Those three words.
Yeah.
It makes sense why it's so iconic.
It really does.
Yeah. I mean, again, lyrically. She's like she's laying next to dead Denny.
Yes.
And also, like, this song, like, charted
yes.
after this episode.
Yeah, no, this was like this episode like made this song, mm-hmm. which is crazy.
I love that.
It's hard to imagine a show being able to do that. I guess like kind of, did you see Russian Doll?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there was like talk about like mm-hmm. the, you know, Gotta Get Up
mm-hmm.
and Russian Doll, but that's only because it plays
like a million times.
100 times throughout the series. And so much of the coverage was more about like, what made you choose this song, knowing that right. you had to listen to a song 100 times less than like,
right.
Like, it was a very self-aware coverage as opposed to just being like, what's this song?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Again, like expert timing
mm-hmm.
with the movement. And like, it's like, it makes you realize how choreographed this show really is.
Right. It's a triumph of editing. Mm-hmm. Like, the editors are doing extremely thorough and, like, detail-oriented work to be able to pull off. Because, you know, in The Room, you might not even know what song it's going to end up going to and things like that. Like, they're just performing with to silence. And it's the editor and the music supervisor that, like, create these moments, which is really, I don't know. That's one of the things I just think is so incredible about TV. It's like, and also weird. It's like, it's not like theater where what you're seeing is what everyone is experiencing. Like, as an actor and a writer, you just, you have a certain way that you think it's going to go, but it could be completely transformed in the edit.
That, I love that so much.
Yeah.
And that speaks to so much about, like, making music in general. It's like the same kind of thing. And yeah, I think that, like, the way that this show has given a voice to a bunch of songwriters that like did not have big careers.
Right.
And were not part of, like, a cultural zeitgeist or whatever, are now forever a part of a community. Is fantastic. I'm so curious to know if, like, Tegan and Sarah's, like, career really skyrocketed.
That's exactly who I was just thinking about too, because they're definitely the most played in the first season. Like, in the first several episodes, there's, like, a Tegan and Sarah episode or song in, like, every single episode. Yeah. And then obviously there's, like, the huge moment in season 10 where Christina and Meredith say goodbye and Where's the Good Go plays.
Yeah. I wanted to say also, this is, I think we were talking about, like, the artistry of all this. And I think that's why I find the musical episode so offensive.
Yeah.
Is because it's like, to me, like, they use the music already as if it's a musical.
Right.
And it's so expertly done. And it's like, oh, you just took me so far out of the world that I hate it.
Yeah.
Like, why?
Yeah, I don't like it. It also is weirdly self-referential. Like, I know that some people who like the musical episode were like, well, I love how they sing Chasing Cars. I'm like, well, I don't.
I,
like,
don't,
why
either.
Would I like that? That I don't want it to be self-referential in that way.
No, I don't need that.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Okay. So those are your clips. I didn't provide any clips because I was like, I just want to hear what Steph has to say. I don't really think that I was, well, because I wanted to give a shout out to, you know, obviously the huge recurrence of Tegan and Sarah. I wanted to talk about that first moment with Portions for Foxes, which we talked about naturally. Okay. I chose a song. So got a request from a listener that was like, you used to do this game in a few of the first episodes where it was like you would play a song and then there would be, you would have the guest guess. And I really liked it because it was like we could play along too. And I was like, okay, I thought I was really bad at choosing the songs, which is why I stopped doing that. I still think I'm bad at choosing the songs. I chose three songs. I've already mentioned two of them, so I'm not going to do those. So that leaves one left, which I think is the hardest one. But
I'm so excited.
Who knows? We're going to see if you can remember. So, okay. So, you know, I will give hints if you like them, but I will play the song that, to be fair, I did check. It made, like, some list of, like, best moment. So, you know, for some people this is actually a very notable moment. So anyway, I've now covered my ass and this is this is a bit of a guessing game. What moment this song played in Grey's Anatomy?
Eagle in the dark, feathers in the pages, monkeys in my heart, rattling their cages.
Okay, the hint is this surrounds
found a way to
a
blue
death.
Another ghost to follow. Said it's only up to you.
Is this George?
It's not George's death, but George is the person who is in this shot.
Yeah.
This is George.
Oh my god. Oh, his dad.
Yes.
Yeah.
You got it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. This is when George is making the decision to, like, unplug his dad and he's saying goodbye.
Choose.
Yeah.
Great song.
I know.
Who's this?
You live on
this is Gary Jules of
the jewels.
No, of Mad World.
Oh,
of Mad World fame.
Holy moly.
Yeah, because, like, you know, I obviously, for those of you guys who don't know what I'm talking about, his biggest song, certainly, like, culturally, is this song.
It actually hurts to hear that.
Just got to hear him sing just a little bit.
All around me are familiar faces.
Did they premiere this in Donnie Darko?
Yes. Yeah. I don't know if they premiered in Darko, but yes. Certainly that is, like, what people know it from.
Yeah.
I, someone with a lot of culture, know it from a CSI episode.
Wow.
It, you know, the cold open for CSI is typically, like, the crime or the setup to the crime. Mm-hmm. And it usually, like, starts with, like, some overhead shot of whatever part of Las Vegas, like, whether it's the Strip or the desert or something like that. And then often there's just a full scene. But there's one cold open where that song plays while, like, you can't hear anything except for the song. All the action is silent and there are, like, people partying in a limo.
Oh.
And I actually hate to beg, but I beg of you, if you know the CSI episode, please tweet at me at Ben Silverberg because actually I am a huge Grey's fan, but the only other show that has, like, 15 seasons that I've seen every episode of multiple times is CSI Las Vegas, the original.
Wow.
And I love that show. That's a show that
How many seasons?
It has 15
seasons.
It ended several years ago.
Wow.
Final season had Ted Danson and Elizabeth Shue. I mean, they were in a couple seasons, the last few seasons, but that was the ending lineup in any case.
Maybe I'll watch.
It's on Hulu. One interesting thing is like, when you think about cultural impact, CSI has had, like, this cultural impact in that there was an uptick of people who wanted to get into forensics and stuff like that, similarly to how Grey's has genuinely inspired a generation of women to want to become surgeons, which is...
Love that.
Incredible. I mean, I love it, but it's also crazy. Culture is so powerful.
I love media.
I love media. Ugh. And you gotta love media.
Gotta love it.
Okay, the only thing left to do are Shondalogs.
Oh.
Is this something you're interested in?
Million percent.
Okay, amazing. So, as you know, I mean, as you know more than anyone, this is a musical moment. I'm out of my personal playlist that I was curating, so I'm going to start doing this hopping around thing again. That's honestly awful. But
I think it's fun.
Thank you so much. Okay. Would you like to go first?
No.
Okay. Let's see what happens when I do this. There's no way to know. Okay. How's this song?
It's a good one.
When I was a kid, I had this hat.
My window show.
I wore it every day. I never took it off. Even when I was in the bath, I just wanted to be wearing my hat. It was, like, embroidered with my name and a little flower. I still have the hat because that's who I am. I save everything. I hold on to objects like they're people with personalities and relationships, and I've always been like that. Because next to the hat, I have a lucky penny and a bracelet made out of paper clips and shoelaces and a jacket. My parents' marriage certificate and all of the stuff that just replaces the things that you're supposed to hold on to, the things that you're supposed to nurture. The hat doesn't fit anymore. I'm not going to have kids. There's no one I'm going to give it to. But that hat it's more than just a thing. It's me. It's part of me. And if you're gonna love me, then you have to love my hat and my lucky penny and my paperclip bracelet and my parents' marriage certificate and this whole house, because everything in it comes with me. And I'll take your stuff too. And then your stuff will become just as important, but not as important as you. Okay, that's the whole thing.
Wow.
Whoa. As I was doing that, I was just like, gosh, I remember this song from Grace, but I couldn't remember. It's too many thoughts. I couldn't remember what it was.
I don't know.
You know what it's from? You know what I can see in it? I can see Meredith like walking. Like she's exhausted and she's had a really long day. And like I can see snippets from that.
Her like little wobble that she has.
Yes, her little wobble.
We need to talk about that. She has a wobble.
She does.
And I love it.
She doesn't, she doesn't walk steady.
I don't know why.
I know.
Someone on Reddit was like, have you ever noticed that Meredith walks weird?
Well, it's funny because in that clip that we watched tonight where she goes out to check on Kyle Chandler, she does like wobble her way out to the hallway. She wobbles out. That's so funny. Yeah. No, in my mind, there's that wobble. Okay.
That was beautiful, by the way.
Thank you so much. You know, I think you'll find that you start talking and then you literally go into a fugue state and you cease to have an identity and it just completely goes away. And no matter how many episodes I do, I still can't describe how my eyes glaze over when I start doing one of those. It's genuinely scary. Anyway, okay. Let's see what song this is. Nope. always a struggle. No, I can only tell. Okay, what about this?
There are no guarantees in life, not for the present.
You think that I'm broken? You think that you could put me back together like one of your patients in the OR? Well, I'm not sick. I'm not broken. I'm strong. When I came out to my family on the farm in Ohio, do you know what my father said to me? He said, I don't love you. And when I met you, you showed me the side of me that I didn't know before, and you loved me and you cared for me. And now you act like I'm broken. I'm not broken. You're broken. That was good fun.
Yeah.
That was fun.
That was
I could do that all day.
Right? You start and you're like, I don't have a game plan for this. And then suddenly you're like, I'm on a farm in Ohio.
I was like, is this April Kepner?
It was a beautiful mashup of so many different. It was like an ode. It was like we have Meredith saying like, you think I'm broken, so fix me, to the therapist.
Oh my God, you're right.
We have a farm. We have Callie and her baggage with her dad. It just was like, it was like a beautiful mashup of all of my favorite moments, except for Kepner, whom I hate. But but the sentiment remains. The sentiment is perfect. Oh my gosh, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. This was so much fun. Where can people find you? And also, where can people listen to your music?
Oh yeah, right. Promotion.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I feel like this is everything I know. Oh. So this is, all my friends are like, literally, finally, you have someone to talk. Like,
it's your expertise.
Yes. Yes. So thank God. My band is called Adult Mom. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us on Twitter at Adult Mom Band.
Yes.
And Instagram. We are going on tour soon.
Oh my gosh.
Through the Midwest. Yeah.
To the very farm in Ohio, yeah, like, that you described.
I'm going to visit it.
Oh my gosh. That's so great. Okay. If you really like this podcast, I hope that you subscribe and rate and review and do all that stuff. See you next week.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.